Hey, everyone, and now it's time for part two of my interview with Renee Safrazah. And yes, I've mispronounced her name even worse here than I did during my interview with her. It's like Safrazah. I think I sound like a bad vampire. This is really bad, even for me. I am really wildly screwing this up. But anyway, enough about that. So yeah, part one, it ended with her talking about, with Renee talking about just a day in a life. And I asked that question because she's not only like a wine consultant and works for a consignment company and a sommelier. It's a very busy life. And I'm always interested in just what is a day in the life like for people like this. And I really enjoyed this interview. I actually bought some wine from her afterwards because I love the area. All the grapes, all the wine was specialized in the northwest part of Italy in Piemonte. So part one ended with her, well, having to sneeze and blow her nose. And now you're going to hear part two. You're going to hear more about Barolo, which of course is one of the best wines in all of Italy. We're also going to talk about how we compare certain wines to movies like Ghostbusters, Jaws, Arrested Development. It's a really fun interview, and about that, and just, you know, comparing Italian red wines to popular pop songs, and about her grandfather making terrible wine that was in Sprite bottles. It's a really fun part two. I really, really enjoyed the interview that I did with Renee, and I think that you will as well. You'll learn a lot, especially about Italian wine and just about the life that she lives, which is a fascinating one for anyone who is interested about the world of wine. So without further ado, part two of my interview with Renee. Please enjoy. Thank you so much.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
And we're back from an exciting adventure of Renee blowing her nose.
Guys, allergies are not fun.
Yeah.
A song with allergies is bad.
Oh, that is, especially if they're smelly. Yeah. Because people will be focused on your nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right. So you're in the office. It's high volume dealing with.
Spend a lot of time doing putting through orders, making sure everything is 100% coordinated, doing a lot of like communication between sales reps and the companies that we sell to. At the same time, kind of just going through that day, making sure everything is going very well and running the operations of that particular aspect of the business. And then once that is kind of finished and rounded off with all the fun bits in between, and I also do eat lunch from time to time, who knows? I don't just drink wine all day, I wish. And then I end up working on a lot of different side projects as well. I like to sell events, so I try to sell as many events as I can to like people to get into knowing wine a lot more. Mm-hmm. So my biggest focus in life is trying to get people to be present at different styles of events that focus on regions, grapes, differences, things that could be like really understandable just from the wine itself. So I do that, and then I often spend a lot of time reading and making dinner and then spending time with loved ones, and then I go to bed. That's my day.
It's a full day.
It's a full day.
And, you know, I mean, you've got, you know, your side projects as well, which we'll get into. But what do we got now? What wine?
So right now we have a little bit of a different, like, this is also by Silvano. This is called their Trabac. It is a blend of Nebbiolo, Barbera, and Cabernet Sauvignon.
That is very, for people listening, that is rare.
It is rare.
When I think Nebbiolo, I think 100%. I mean, when I think of Piemonte, for the most part, it's kind of like Burgundy.
You know,
it's just mono grape wines.
It's the only wine that I brought today that isn't Hundo P.
Yeah. Yeah.
Millennial phrase for
I was going to say Hundo P.
Hundo P.
Hundo P.
I know.
I don't think I'm allowed to say that.
I don't know, but I grew up in Woodbridge.
Yeah, I don't think I'm allowed. I think if I say it, it's like when I dab. You know, I'm not allowed to dab.
I can't do it. I did it wrong. I did it the wrong way.
You did screw up dabbing. That is true. So what is the, and if you don't know the exact, it's okay. Do you know the approximate in terms of the blend? Like, I'm assuming it's Nebbiolo base, but give me the...
It's Barbera base Nebbiolo base. And then Cabernet. And okay. As far as I know, it changes from year to year depending on like, they have like a master blender that does it. It's not really like a set formula every year.
Good.
So they have not released it to me this year, unfortunately.
Barbera first, but then it's Nebbiolo, Barbera first. And then with a kick of cab.
A kick of cab. Yeah. And this is also coming up through the Alba area. So there is a lot of like remnants from like the previous wine, which is also by the same producer, that you have within the glass as well. A little bit softer. Mm-hmm. You get those macerated cherries kind of come back into this one.
Yeah, but not as...
But not as like just macerated cherries.
Not as much as the last.
Yeah. You also get this really nice, there's a soft level of oak aging on it, but it's all neutral barrels, so you can get a little bit of that toast aspect to it, but it's kind of just coming off more round. You get
the plum.
You get the plum. You get some black spice going on in there. You get that anise spice going on as well. And with the cab, you also get like almost like very, very roasted bell peppers, like very, very like roasted and like softened and just like almost dead to the earth bell peppers.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it is, and again, I'm playing the result because I know the grapes, but it's like Nebbiolo with a bit of a modern kick.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of different producers up in Piemonte that are doing these versions of Super Tuscan, to speak, where they're trying to, like, blend in, this is actually listed as a Langhe Rosso, but if they're trying to blend in, different, more international varietals and French varietals to kind of create this much more understandable, softer version of wine, which is essentially what was happening with the Super Tuscans the entire time.
Yeah.
And now they get a different descriptor of a different Italian region and everybody's all up in arms just because that's how Italy is.
Oh, you know what? That's a good question because people need to know in Piemonte, like in a bunch of wine regions, the battle between the modernists and the traditionalists, it's a long one when forever it was, the wine is going to be macerated forever, it's going to be thrown into giant old oak bottes, usually from like Slovenia, and then you don't open the wine, once we sell it to you, you put it away for 20 years.
Exactly. And then the new age version.
There is a place for that. The new age.
The new age version is when you, the whole thought process behind the new age version is that you should be able to buy a wine that you can drink within a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So that involves using newer oak, more neutral barrels that are also smaller in size, and just trying to get a wine that ages a little bit easier and faster for people so that they can buy it and enjoy it sooner.
Yeah. And this one. Yeah, obviously this one you don't want to drink it right when it's released. But yeah, this is a wine you can open up sooner. And it's not that you can't age this fella, but you can certainly you can open it sooner. This is very warm. This is very inviting wine.
Mm-hmm.
There still is the spice. There still is, you know, that this is a northern Italian flavored wine.
It's true. And this is often actually, this is the wine that I would give if... cab drinkers, if Cabernet, like classic cab, Cali vibes came into my house and it was like, welcome to Italy. I'm not changing. Here's the wine you get to drink.
Yeah.
Like this is my vibes of getting something that's a little bit more understandable for people, but that's also like leaning on that level of elegance, that level of understanding. I think it takes a lot of empathy and understanding to create a wine that people can enjoy, but that also has a lot of backbone, technicality to it, and really good results within the glass. Like there's a lot of thought within that to make something that is like almost towards like a pop song. Think about it in that perspective.
Yeah.
Pop songs have a lot of thought. They don't sound like it.
But they do.
But they have a ton of thought. Why are they so catchy? And this is that exact version of those kinds of wines to me. I want something that's catchy and that people will like, but I also want it to be long-lasting, persistent on the palate, beautiful, really expressing what I like to do in wine.
And as we're talking, I'm lamely trying to cut a piece of cheese and I'm ruining it. And now we've just mangled the Gouda.
I don't know why
We've just mangled the good. It looks like a star.
By the way, in terms of pop song,
Shout out, Mbop.
Mbop, you just shout out Hanson. Mbop. I also really liked Hanson when I was a kid, but also Spice Girls came on at a Halloween party the other day, and I freaked my shit.
Yeah. By the way, I like how you said almost fuck, then you went to freak, but then you still said shit. That was good of you. It's like, oh, I'm swearing, or I shouldn't swear. Now I'm going to swear.
I'm going to swear.
Hanson, they got a good voice. Like, you can say what you want. They are talented performers.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Hanson wasn't made for me. Mm-mm. When Hanson came out, I was in my late 20s. You know, you think Hanson was meant for me?
Mm-mm. Even pop songs now, I absolutely love. Like, anything that's super catchy and really interesting. Like, what's that one with Pharrell and Katy Perry? I can't remember it right now.
Yeah.
But like anything that's like super catchy, I'm like, I love this. This is so great. I'm gonna dance.
People don't want to admit it, but there's these songs are popular for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Nickelback. I know it's
popular. No, they suck.
I know it's popular not to like them, but they suck.
They suck.
It's really quite simple.
I don't know. I'm just gonna play my Lizzo playlist constantly because I loved her forever. She's amazing. Anyway,
yeah.
Well,
back to wine. Well, I mean, again, it's Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with interesting people. So sometimes we're going to the stuff.
Top music to listen to in the morning? Lizzo. She's great. It's really loud. It really makes you feel like, love it.
That's it. So you, it's Lizzo.
For me, it's Lizzo.
Yeah. For me, this won't shock you. I get up and then it's immediately, I'm listening to the radio and all the shows and, just getting my brain there.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, and then it's all podcasts and it's all talk and it's that all the time.
Okay, so I love Lizzo and that's what I listen to in the morning when I'm feeling in a dancing mood, but otherwise it goes directly into the daily from the New York Times and any other like political podcast I can
Of course. You're the only person that says I love bureaucracy. I mean, I don't want to go nerd alert, but that is absolute nerd alert.
I'm 100% a nerd. Yeah. I'm cloaking myself in fancy clothes.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Pretty much all I got.
Yeah, yeah. You're there talking about the acidity of the Nebbiolo, but really you're just getting into policy. So what I want to talk about next is the last time you drank wine with Sprite. Which is something you talked about. I'm sure it was in the Jamie Drummond interview. Good Food Revolution. Shout out to Jamie Drummond. I steal so much stuff from his interviews
with his guests,
and then I take it and turn it into my own questions and stuff like that. So, but before that, and by the way, you need to know this. This is a two-part interview.
Okay.
This is because when people hear this part, it won't be at an hour because there'll be some editing. Like I don't. By the way, not editing. I don't edit any content. I'm just talking when we've taken the breaks. I never edit content. But we are now over an hour.
Yeah, but it's fun though.
Yeah, it is fun.
It's fun though.
It's fun. We're trying wine.
It's fun though. So what Matt is talking about, I constantly give this wine reference because as a sommelier, everybody always asks me what was like, did you grow up in wine? Did your parents like wine? Like, how did you get into wine? And like, the real reason is I got into wine because it provided a lot of opportunities. And you know what? I like wine. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize I liked wine until I started working in restaurants. When I was a kid, wine was what my grandfather made, and it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. I honestly cannot describe how terrible it is, but this is honestly my best go of it, is that he would take grapes and ferment them into wine and then bottle them in Sprite bottles that we use, like 1 liter pop bottles that were already used and already open. So like everything was already oxidizing.
So these weren't new French Sprite bottles?
No, they were not new French Sprite bottles. It was terrible. And it was stronger than Amarone. It had more tannins than Barolo.
Oh.
It was insane. And you had to mix it with Sprite to drink it. You just had to. And that just got it to like the Dolcetto level of sweetness.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It didn't really help very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it. And I often tend to mention this particular, this memory of mine every time I talk about wine, because I was never a person that came up in wine. Wine to me is something that is, interesting and filled with many different pathways. And mm-hmm. there's so many different things you can do in wine.
Yeah.
And the fact that I didn't necessarily know what it was when I was a kid probably is mildly for the better, because then I get to be surprised all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I'd say this. Even if you're an expert, you should be surprised all the time. Because
exactly.
wine teaches you humility mm-hmm. and good luck trying to figure out all the grapes. And just when you think you got a handle on it, there's a new appellation, there's a new law, and now there's Grand Selection in Tuscany, and now they've done this over here. And, you know, and then it's just, you know, you should not try to keep up. You should just be a leaf in the river and just go along for the ride and learn as much as you can.
It's true. Lazy river all the way.
All the way. What do we got now?
Okay. All right. Now we have, we're back to Alina Giuseppe, and we have their La Mora Barolo.
Mm-hmm.
We're on
Where's
Barolo.
Where's La Mora, by the way?
La Mora is one of the really, there's two basic areas of La Mora, of Barolo, that really stand out. There's like Serra Lunga d'Alba and La Mora, and those are really giving like two sides of Barolo. Barolo is like two sides of the same coin. So you have La Mora, which is giving a much more elegant version of this style. You get a lot more florality, you get a lot more softness within the palate. And then you have Serra Lunga that is giving you a lot more spice, a lot more boldness, a little bit more rough, which is really nice.
And it's crazy. I would recommend to people, if you get an opportunity, find, you know, Barolo made from good producers, try to find the same vintage and buy from the different regions, and have a Barolo night, which is, by the way, that's a pretty awesome night.
The Barolo night's probably like the best thing that you could ever possibly
yeah,
do.
Like, just,
it's honestly a great idea.
And compare and contrast the wines from one region to another, and you'll be amazed. And they're not that far apart. As someone who's driven around Barolo on a couple occasions, they're not, I mean, it's just a couple windy roads. You go up a hill, down a hill, and then bang, you're in the next region. And as for me, I think I was telling you before, Barolo's what got me into wine. It was Barolo, a brick orange old Barolo got me into wine.
And it is really lovely wine to like get into wine with, because on it has so much change and difference within it, just like right across the spectrum.
Yeah.
So this is this wine in particular, this is called their Ascheri, which is their, not their crew, but their vineyard name for mm-hmm. the particular level of Barolo that it is. So it's like a really lovely vineyard that's happening within their little property. And like I said before, Alina Giuseppe does do a lot of more smaller style of production. And you really do get this within the glass itself.
The floral on this note.
Oh my God, it's crazy.
It's nuts. It's excellent. Like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you have every rose you could possibly smell. You have...
Yep.
The fresh rose that's just like you bought at the floral store, at the flower store, and then all the way up until it kind of gets bruised and it's just chilling out in your mm-hmm. kitchen. It still smells good, but you have to change the water. It's real nice.
Light notes of perfume.
You have that like anise spice that's a little bit more in the forefront with this one, but you do have it like a nice backbone of that almost fruit note, and that tar. Tar yep. and roses is 100% a marker of Barolo.
Oh, yeah.
Like what you really get within this wine is roses that have been freshly sprinkled, almost as if wedding night style, down a freshly tarred road, and somehow there's like cherries just walking around. It's very dreamy. It's very dally.
This wine here is one I wish I would get on a blind taste. Because
oh, yeah.
immediately you would, boom, you'd go there.
You go Barolo. You're like this yeah. is Barolo. This yeah. is La Mora. This is going great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'd feel so good about yourself.
Oh, yeah. This is like lifting like 200 pounds for wine drinkers.
Yeah.
Like
oh, yeah.
for professional wine drinkers.
Yeah. It's like you want that. You always wanted the Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc, because you could just go, yeah, I'm done. Just one quick sniff and we're moving on with ourselves.
It's so true. And this wine does everything on the palate that you want it to do. It's absolutely elegant on the palate. The tannin structure is long, it's soft, the acid is there, but it's not necessarily coming out exactly as like right in your face as it can be. Mm-hmm. Those fruit notes are a little bit more tart. You get all that like earthy spices on the palate as well. And you really like, honestly, I could still feel it acting as I took a sip probably.
Oh yeah, this has got like
length. 1,000 words ago.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This one
it's going. It's
this
going.
This one, you know, like the bad guest at the end of the night. This one lingers.
Oh yeah, it's just yeah. like, "Hey man, you going to do the dishes or leave?"
Yeah, exactly. Wasn't there No, I was trying to make, I had a music analogy, but I can't do it unless the Cranberries. Didn't they have a song about linger?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
They
yeah.
did. They yeah. did. Wait, does Cranberries also do zombie?
I'm not sure.
I thought they did. Anyway.
So this is lovely. What's
So this is the Eschgari Barolo.
Yep.
And it, like I said, it is by Elena Giuseppe.
Please be $14.95.
Please be $14.95. It is $65.95.
It's a great price.
But it honestly, it's great price. That's Barolo. Pretty amazing. It's Barolo. This is what Barolo is.
You don't get if someone sells you a $30 Barolo, actually, they could be out there like the real sort of large company entry style. And actually, I've tried some Barbarescos that have been under 30.
Okay, that
were
I get good, that.
That were good.
But this Nebbiolo we had by Prescaia,
yeah,
that was $33.50.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
come on.
Like, yeah. Come on. Yeah. Come on. Come on. Come on. It grows in only one region in the world. This is what it does. This is what this grape does. And it's good because of that. And at the same time, buying it at a consignment pricing, buying it at this price, keeping it at your house, what this is on a wine list is going close to 200.
Oh, yeah.
If not two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh no, that that price point's great. Mm. You know, that price, yeah, I'm debating what to get. I got some mental, you know, I got some check marks in my head about what I'm gonna grab.
I have one more wine too.
I know.
One more.
We'll get to that one in a second. Let me actually, where are my glasses? I want to go back to some of my actual
back
to my pre-prepared questions.
Do your pre-prepared questions.
All right, let's do some of the LinkedIn game. Yeah, let's do some of the LinkedIn game. I want to go, let's see, if some of the places you've been at. The LCBO sales consultant, you sort of touched on it in Italy. Some of your favorite memories.
Some of my favorite memories of LCBO sales consultants in Italy.
LCBO and Ontario Industry / Sales Consultant, June 2015 to July 2016, 1 year and 2 months. During my time at Castello, and I could read
your
entry.
That's exactly what I wrote. I forgot.
Exactly. I love you questioning me. Don't question me. Question you.
I forget what I write.
I cut and pasted your LinkedIn account.
That's very true. But
fake news. Never said it. Actually, you said it right there.
I know, but here's the thing with me. Once I type it out of my brain, it's gone forever. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's so great. I can't believe I wrote that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was me working at Castelli d'Ancade. And then I was in the process of bringing them into Canada. And that's what the LCBO consultant was for. Like we were they're trying to get signed at different agencies, which ended up having me lead to the work that I did next within Heirloom Vine Imports. And then moving to being more part of the wine agent, the wine world afterwards. There was really a lot of work to be put in because it was really funny. At the time, because I worked in wine and I was from Canada, it was really quite interesting because everybody thought that I knew a lot more than I did. I was like 24 when I was there.
Really?
I was. I'm only 29.
Uh-huh. Like, really? I thought you were 38.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Totally. So really 20, helped.
Yeah, 24.
I was only 24 when I was there and everybody like...
Were there any moments of insecurity or any like did you have any of those moments of you're a very confident person. I mean, that's a compliment. Because sometimes people do that as backhanded. She's very confident.
She's very confident.
Which is code for what a man.
No, I was way worse as a younger person. I had unbridled confidence.
Wait a minute,
you're
worse than you are now?
That's yes, ridiculous. It's terrible.
Okay, so then you were fine with it. You never had those moments of what am I doing here?
No, my thought was I'm here to do this thing that they want me to do, and I'm probably going to be great at it. I was way, way, way worse as a young person than I am now.
And by the way, you shouldn't say worse. That's
more unbridled.
Okay,
there.
Buca. Hold on, I'm not done. When I looked at your LinkedIn account, this was your shortest stay. You were intro sommelier at Buca for 4 months. Why only 4 months? What happened there?
Okay, I don't really mean to speak ill of Buca,
mm-hmm.
but...
However,
they have a tendency to stockpile talent.
Okay.
And in that stockpiling, I wasn't feeling like I was doing a role that I enjoyed. And that's pretty much it. Like, okay. I had come off of doing... A wine director position, mm-hmm. essentially.
At Heirloom Vine Imports?
No, at Portland Variety previous, I was like the wine educator and director.
Yep. Okay.
For that company. And I was moving into a space that I thought would be more in terms of like an extra lead of responsibility for it. And it just wasn't what I was expecting. So I was there for 4 months. It was great. And also the food was good and everyone was very nice, but it just, I'm not the kind of person, everything in my life is very much centered around like what I do in my career.
Yeah.
Like I will spend hours working on things and my entire day will go towards work. And I love that. But if I'm not doing something that I like, then I drop off the ball pretty fast. I'm like, I just want to do this anymore. Bye.
How difficult is it for you to disconnect from it all?
Oh, it's pretty hard. It's honest. It's pretty darn hard. There is not a moment where I don't think about what I'm doing or what I want to do or what I could be doing or how much work I could accomplish.
How often do you feel guilty if at the end of the day you've had whatever you would deem a lazy day, which I'm sure is still quite productive, but how guilty do you get at the end of the day when I should have done more?
I'm laughing right now because it's like every single day.
I kind of thought so.
I'm not even kidding. Like my partner bothers me about it. Like I'll have like a list of 20 things I want to do in a day and she'll send me an article that says most people accomplish 7 things in a day.
That's mean.
And like not even mean, like just to kind of like, she has a really wonderful way of grounding me and making me realize that, because if I don't accomplish all 20 things, I'm like, I'm a failure. Everything's terrible. But it's not. It's honestly not. Like I have very high expectations of myself and I think a lot about like what I can accomplish within whatever I'm doing. But it's really important to realize, and the older I get, the more that I realize this, is that time in a day is only so much, and having a larger viewpoint of your goals is very important. I do have a very unhealthy relationship with work, but at the same time, I kind of really like it.
Yeah.
So it's not that bad. I just try to not give myself additional stress.
Okay. Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is that for someone with such confidence, but then yet also then dealing with guilt all the time, it's an interesting sort of yin and yang.
Because I was raised Catholic.
Oh, okay. And I'm sure you're still very practicing. All right. We've got one last wine to try. And by the way, that Barolo was excellent. Just a lot of depth there. I mean, it's exactly what you want. It's delivering on it. It's a great finish. Good acid. You know, the tannins. Everything you would expect from a Barolo. You would not... If you were at a restaurant and you spent $200 on that, you're not going to be upset. You're not going to be sitting there going, I can't believe, blankety blank, I just spent that amount of money, on that wine.
That amount of wine.
That amount of wine. And haven't drank enough wine yet to be making those sort of slurs. One thing I want to get in is just where right now, just your own thoughts about selling wine in Ontario, consignment. How comfortable are people with it? Like just not restaurants and things like that, but just the average person, just getting people over the idea of, oh, I can't buy a 12 bottles of wine or 6 bottles of wine. How hard of that is that for you in terms of trying to try to sell the wine? We'll start. Actually, no, before there, let's talk about the final wine that we are drinking. By the way, needs to be said, great job, the Corvin.
You're very welcome.
I have seen so many times people screw up the Corvin or, you know, just Corvin issues. I feel we're not where we need to be with Corvin technology.
Yeah,
and I have to say, I was very upset at all the leaders of Canada when they were discussing the issues, you know, climate, housing prices, the poor, immigration.
What about the Corvin?
No one talked about Corvin technology.
It was terrible.
Where we are now, but the fact we should be so further ahead.
We should be. Yeah. We should have those ones that pour and then stop when you pull up. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. I practice a lot.
Yeah, that was good.
And by that, I mean I drink a lot of wine at my own house.
Your Corvin technique is strong.
Thank you very much.
It's good Corvin game.
Thank you.
But how hard is it to convince people? Because if people listening here, a lot of people listening to this podcast, they probably never bought wine from a consignment company.
No, but it's the same thing that I do with people at restaurants, with servers at restaurants. I try to inform people. A lot of people don't even know that the people that do the real work behind everything that's in the LCBO, I know I'm a supporter of the LCBO because I support bureaucracy. Because bureaucracy gives people an equal playing field. Mm-hmm. And I am a big fan of an equal playing field. At the same time, it's very frustrating. Anyway, a lot of people don't realize that the people playing on that field are wine agents that are doing all this work, that are putting wines into the LCBO, that are putting wines into restaurants. And they're wondering, why can't I buy this at the LCBO? Why can't I get this here? I often talk about an app, Buy the Case, which is annoyingly just on iPhones. But if you have an iPhone, you're very lucky. Congratulations. You can download Buy the Case and find out who is selling a wine that you like, and you can buy it by the case. Now, when it comes to talking to people about buying wines by the case, most people that I talk to about this that are in the adult years of their life and okay. probably buy a case if they like wine, because why not keep it around?
Yeah.
Like, I'm past the point in my life when I needed to go out to the store every time I wanted a beverage.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I would like to come home and have beverages already there.
Yes.
That's pretty much my goal in life. So I feel like a lot of people are on that same page. And I try to make it more of like, this is something you can do too. And not a lot of people know about that. So
yeah.
You should buy from us. And I try to make it as friendly as possible. I try to be also as convincing as possible. Maybe it works out. I don't know.
And the good consignment companies like the one Barrel Select, it's excellent customer service.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the good ones get back to you fast.
Yeah.
You know, they help you out. They'll also let you know, hey, this is coming in. If you'd like a case or a six pack, we will let you know.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like an interview that'll come out before this one with one of the main guys from wineandline.ca.
And with
Sean.
Sean's great.
Yeah. I actually helped get him into the National Club to do a Spanish pop-up.
Yeah. You have to help me get into the National Club because they know me and I want to do other stuff there.
I can help you.
National Club.
I'm on the...
Is Winnie still running it?
Or Winnie's did they done. Change?
Winnie, Who's now?
Winnie... I forget their name. But thanks for putting me on the spot here.
I'm sorry. I missed Winnie. She missed
Winnie.
Winnie
Goh, the only one who's president of the National Club for two straight years.
Two straight years. Yeah. Great lady. Yeah, really she's the freaking best. Amazing. Also, her jewelry is to die for.
Of course you know Winnie. Everyone knows Winnie.
Hey!
No. I mean, there's a compliment to her. She knows everyone.
Thank you.
But now we're getting really inside baseball. So what are we
inside
drinking?
Inside baseball. All right. So this is the last wine. We are drinking Casina Adelaide, which is doing a Barolo, but it's from the Canubi crew, like mm-hmm. I mentioned previously.
What is Canubi crew?
So Canubi...
Sounds like a boy band from the 80s.
Canubi crew?
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. So...
Yo, girl. I'm here for you.
We the Canubi crew. Yeah. Okay. So...
Hey, girl.
You gotta stop. I'm never going to make it through it. So crews are growth areas of different wine regions. You often hear about them within like French wine regions. So cru level productions, if you're looking at Burgundy, would be like Côte Rôtie, which is like a low level cru, all the way up into like if you go into southern Burgundy, you have Vence Romanée or DRC coming from that area as well. So this is a cru, which is a high level growth within Barolo. It's called Canubi, and it's a very small plot of land. In 2014, it was considered the 50th UNESCO heritage site.
Ah,
Who knew?
I'd gone there twice, and I didn't know I was at a heritage site.
Yeah, you were 100%.
Cento
per cento.
This is a real problem.
It's a real problem. It's you got to really work on it. I don't know what to tell you. So it's just one of the major like best versions of producing a Barolo from a region. You do have some new age producers there, but you also have some very old school producers there. Most often they're old school. And because of that, you have a wine that is incredibly ageable, that's incredibly focused on terroir, that really does give way to everything that you would probably want to show within a wine.
Yeah. And this is an impressive nose.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I call, it's both restrained but with power.
Exactly.
Like, it's not jumping out as much of a lot of the other wines. Like, you got to give a little extra sniff. But once everything crawls in, you're like, oh, damn, you know what this is? Yeah, let's go back to Jaws.
This is a Ghostbusters wine, actually.
No, because Ghostbusters, they hit... Well, actually, Ghostbusters has a bit of a slow burn, but Jaws has a really slow burn. You don't see the shark until a long time in the movie. It's slow. It's a slow buildup.
True.
And, you know, same thing here on the nose of this fella.
I will make my favorite reference.
Go.
This is an Arrested Development wine. This is you got to be sticking with this for a while, and then it's coming through.
I've made a huge mistake.
I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
made a very good choice.
We could just do the most nerdy Arrested Development.
Honestly, right? I like sing that stupid sad song every time I do something stupid.
By the way, today on my radio show, someone played Final Countdown. And I said the line, illusions, Michael, tricks are what whores do for money. My producer in the studio was like, why are you saying that on air? I'm like, you have to know, Job.
You have to know. You have to know. I also like how when he was in the season that they did on Netflix, they're calling Job. He's like saying something. He's like, that guy in the Bible, Job, who's calling me? Yeah. Like he's so dumb. Anyway, so back to the wine.
Yeah.
It's a creeper. It really does kind of, it is, it's a creeper, it is. It really does kind of get up slowly within every possible version of aromatics that you can have. The roses in this are like the ones that your grandmother had at their house in almost like a potpourri that's been dried. It's like presented to show. Like it's not just any day roses that have been going through any of their own versions. They are in their one final form. The cherries within it, those really lovely macerated cherries, are going 100% black cherries. You're getting 100% of that almost like right up to ripeness and just before it starts getting really weird. The anise spices are almost like that fresh black licorice, but not that Dutch kind with the salt, like the American kind.
Now that is a wine note for you there, people.
It's a wine note, guys. It's a real wine note.
If you ever need to fake it,
yeah,
just repeat everything Renee just said there.
Yeah.
Now, don't do that with a stainless steel Riesling.
You're going to want to save that wine note
for the right wine. That's a good wine note.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I love talking about Nebbiolos because they kind of range so much. So if Guime is like, if I relate them to people.
Gamay. I'm like, wait a minute. Is there some fancy way of saying gamay now that I'm not aware of?
It's gamay. I pronounced it wrong because I'm dyslexic and this is what happens to my life.
If it's dyslexic, when you pronounce it, yabag?
No.
Isn't that backwards?
No, there's no backwards.
Oh, okay.
There's just mispronunciations of words.
Oh, okay.
So like different letters sound like different letters.
Right.
Gamay. Yeah. So I like relating wines to people. So if Gamay is Nebbiolo that's been to the gym and it's been running some errands, mm-hmm. it's really like getting its day done.
Yeah.
This is Nebbiolo at like the gala out mm-hmm. to impress, like really just being a socialite. This is every version of that.
It's funny you say that word because you give that analogy because the word that comes to mind with this is elegant. This is a really elegant wine. Mm-hmm. This is beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's on the palate. You're really getting that nice, clean, soft, dancey, persistent version of a Barolo.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Before we go, what's the vintage and what's the price point of this?
All right. On this guy, we are looking at 2013, which is actually a vintage that I quite enjoy from mm-hmm. this particular region. And then for price point.
And again, this is like single vineyard Barolo. So this is definitely for people listening. It's going to be a jump up from the last one because the last Barolo, excellent, but it would be sourced from just a larger area in terms of where the grapes are from.
Yeah, it's a definite jump up. We're looking at $99.95.
Oh.
I know.
Okay, that's less than I thought.
It's less than you think.
Yeah. Is that 6-pack or is that a 12?
This is coming in a 12-pack, mm-hmm. which is why the price gets to be like so nice and low.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is coming from Tre Amici. Like this is the best version of working with a bigger wine agency.
Yeah.
You can throw a lot more weight behind an order, behind it coming into the market. And this is actually why I like bureaucracy. And it comes all back to this, and I'm going to relate it to Barolo. Because the harder you work and the harder you're able to sell and the more customers you're able to get, the more you are able to bring in things at a lower cost of price and keep that at a nice level. Bureaucracy is a great way to kind of have capitalism at an equal playing field. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Politics with Renee plus Wine.
Is that the name of your new podcast?
Yep.
By the way, don't you dare do it. There's enough of us out there. Well, we'll end with this. Where would you like to be in 5 years?
I probably like to be working more internationally, working with different winemakers and wineries and different companies around the world to kind of give them a sense of how to sell and how to create those different experiences for people within wine.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Renee, this has been fantastic. The Lost interview was a lot of fun, and this one just as much. In fact, this is going to be a two-parter. I'm gonna cut up the first one. It's going to mean more work for me, but I'm gonna cut this one up because I keep the podcast under an hour, and we have been talking for an hour and 27 minutes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
That's fine.
The good thing is your drive home will be not as bad as your drive here.
No,
because
it won't.
At this point, the traffic will have lightened up a bit.
See, this is the greatest thing about talking for this long. Yeah. I get to go home in a non-traffic hour.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's Toronto. It's not a non-traffic hour. It's a less traffic hour. All right. I'm going to give you one more shameless plug because it's been at least half an hour since you've like given your entire dossier to listeners. Renee, where can people find these wines?
Everybody can find these wines. You can email me at Renee@TreAmici.com, TreAmiciWines.com, or Renee@VerticalWineGroup.com. You can find them on the Tre Amici Wines website as well as the Vertical Wine Group website. And just reach out to me if you would like to talk about these wines more. My Instagram is life.by.renee. And, you know, just say hi. I like talking about wine. It's a cool thing.
Renee, thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome.
Thanks for coming over. Thanks for bringing by the treats.
No problem. Anytime, really.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Audioboom, and wherever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.